Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View for Monday evening, March 12th. I'm your humble host, PK, here at Third Stream View, and that's my show because I pay for it. I control it. I run it. And as always, I give thanks to the suits in the office. Well, I don't know if they're wearing suits, but that term, the suits. Thank you to bbsradio.com, where I am every Monday evening, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, 11:55 Eastern, here on bbsradio.com, where bbsradio.com is part of the alternative news media, which I always give thanks to the alternative news media, and I praise them for promoting free speech and free thought and free inquiry. And I discuss many things here, especially politics, the ethics of liberty, history, and geography, which I realize are the two lost subjects in America. I talk about geopolitics. I talk about war. I talk about race, culture, music, Zionism, and Israel. Those last two, which I'm very critical of. And I always feel free to speak my mind here. And anyone who calls in can speak their mind. They can challenge me. They can debate me. But I like this format because it allows me a lot of freedom. And I've always liked individual freedom. I've never been one of the sheeple. I'm a band leader, hopefully with some good people skills. So I have a sort of a take on life that's different than most people. I've traveled a lot, especially outside of the country. So I'm pretty good in geography and all these things that combined give one an overview, especially with my knowledge of economics, especially the Austrian School of Economics as advocated by Ron Paul and those of us who are in the disciplines of the Austrian School of Economics. Another thing that I do is that I always reject the following terms as a type of would-be censorship to shut down all honest, intellectual, objective, scholarly, peaceful inquiry and debate. These terms that I reject always are, for example, racism, racist, anti-Semitism, treasonous, unpatriotic. So, oh, and so, of course, conspiracy theory or conspiracy or conspirator, those terms that the status quo likes to throw around. And when I speak of the status quo, I am mainly referring to the corporate Zionist, pro-Israel major networks. That includes, you know, ABC, NBC, CBS, NPR, all the cable networks, most of the big newspapers, all that sort of thing. They're part of what I refer to as the regime. They're part of the government media complex. Of course, all tied in with the CIA. So I'm sure those pricks from the CIA are listening tonight. Hello, CIA, otherwise known as Cocaine Importation Agency. And wouldn't you guys and the FBI and the national security crowd, wouldn't you love to shut my show down and people like me who aren't afraid to speak truth to power? Wouldn't you just love to do that? Because we know that the federal government, of course, Obama and the rest, they would love to be able to shut down the internet in case of emergency, which is no other than shutting down free inquiry and debate and dissent and crushing freedom of speech, because this is a new era now with the internet, whatnot. Freedom of the press, of course, belongs to those who own the printing press. But when you have a computer or own a computer or have access to a computer, you have access, instant access to information. Now, there's a lot of misinformation out there too, but you get better at learning about it as you sift through it. Some things you might find to be totally outrageous, you could reject, you know, as out of hand. But, of course, to each his own. But there is a lot of research. There is a lot of information. And now, you know, in a split second, information what's happening on other sides of the world. Of course, the television media brings you this too. But the internet has revolutionized communication and business and whatnot. So I want to keep it free and open and free of persecution and censorship. Now, I might have a friend of mine calling in tonight, Andy, if he's out there. I don't know if he's out there yet, but he might be calling in. He's a pretty clever guy, gold investor. We're on the same page about usually about politics and the wars and whatnot. Last week I spoke about the wars and, you know, sort of politics in general. And I don't like where the country's headed, as many of you don't. I saw on 60 Minutes last night the head of the Mossad, which is Israel's CIA, which I am fond of saying that I believe that Mossad was heavily, heavily involved in 9/11, bringing down the buildings, and probably in league with some rogue elements of the CIA or the military, possibly. But that's how I see it. But anyway, and I had heard Ron Paul quoting this guy even last year, that this former head of the Mossad thinks it's a very foolish thing to attack Iran, as I do. Because, as I mentioned, I think I mentioned this last week, Iran is already encircled by 45 U.S. bases. And to their southwest, Israel, with its over, you know, 200 to 300 nukes, plus its nuclear submarines. And I can't believe the Germans keep giving them all this free stuff. I guess their post-World War II guilt, you know, when will that ever end? Along with all these Holocaust survivors. Why are there Holocaust survivors? I thought they were all killed. I've talked about that before. That's another issue. But no, I'm not a Holocaust denier, but I have certain questions about how things turned out and certain accusations I make that conflict with the general information. I'll be the Andy's with us. All right. I heard voices.
Yes, I'm here. Yes, I'm here.
Oh, you got away from the in-laws, huh?
Yeah. I had to put the drink down and come to the phone.
That's the only time you drink when they're visiting, right?
Mostly, yeah. You know Italians and all that stuff. Have a drink with lunch. Have a drink with dinner. Have a drink to celebrate the finish of dinner. Have a drink before dinner. Have a drink later in the evening to celebrate the end of dinner that went very well kind of dinner.
But Southern Europe has less alcoholism. It's more of a social thing. The Northern Europeans and the British,
yeah, exactly.
There's more alcoholism.
Yeah, in the North they drink to get drunk and to fall down and act foolish. In the South it's social. It's really just everybody sitting around, everybody having something, trying a new flavor, a new taste to see how it feels, what it tastes like. Yeah.
So the North is more like America then?
Although it doesn't look as much like America these days.
Right. It is.
Well, then again, you know, I mean, I don't mean to be, you know, make a derogatory statement there. I'm just saying it's becoming more of a melting pot in the north of Europe as well as in the south. Although in the south, you find actually in Italy, you know, Italians want Italy to stay Italian.
Right.
They have the Africans coming in from the south. They'd like them all to go back to Africa. Of course, you know, they don't say this in the news, but, you know, if you talk to anybody on the street, they're like, yeah, the Africans can go back to Africa now. And then you have the Eastern Europeans coming in through the north of Italy, and they'd like them all to go home as well, because Italy is a very traditional old country, and they like it that way.
Who's going to pick their crops? Are Italians in the south going to pick their crops?
What crops?
Well, there's agriculture in the south.
It's mostly in the north.
Spain has a lot of agriculture, a lot of citrus.
Sure, they do.
So,
well, they also have a 50% unemployment rate in 18 to 30-year-olds. They could pick the crops.
Well, they want us like Americans. They won't do it. Plus, are Americans going to uproot and, you know, travel thousands of miles, for example, to the Southwest and become migrant workers?
No.
You know,
travel to the Midwest to become migrant workers.
It's not going to happen. Yeah, when I was growing up, there were Mexican immigrants working in the fields, but now those fields are pretty much gone.
Yeah, when my father had an asparagus farm, he had migrant workers coming in every summer to pick the asparagus.
From Mexico?
Yeah, all the way up from Mexico. They would come.
Why
to
wouldn't
Michigan.
You
they
pick it?
I was living in Florida.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Well, I helped to till the field. I pulled all the stumps. I got rid of the rocks, and then I left town.
Well, that's good. Well, Florida has plenty of immigrant workers too.
Oh, it sure does.
But Europe is becoming, you know, there's a lot of Africans and Muslims in Europe, and I do want to see that, you know, they retain their culture and their language, you know. But the trouble is, a lot of that is the huge European welfare states.
Which are crumbling.
They're
crumbling in a big way right now.
That will probably in itself put an end to a lot of immigration.
Well, this is exactly, you know, you'll hear American socialists talk about socialism is wonderful. Have you been to Sweden lately? Sweden's socialist system works. Yes, Sweden's socialist system worked when it was only Swedes living in Sweden, and they all worked together. They were homogeneous. They were all Swedes working together. But now you have a lot of Muslims coming in, Middle Eastern, Eastern Europeans. They come in and they say, hey, this is great. We can live on the system. We don't even have to work. Now you have a younger generation of Swedes seeing the same thing and going, they don't work? Why do I have to work? I can live on the system too. And what happens is the system crumbles.
But I understand the huge welfare state. I don't understand why they have liberal immigration policies that let that take place in the first place. Because you think the socialists would want to look after their own people first.
Oh, that's the ideal of socialism, right? But the ideal I don't think ever really works in socialism.
Well, I think, therefore, I can't be a socialist.
And there you go.
Of any stripe.
That's for sure. It doesn't work. It's like Margaret Thatcher said, socialism works until you run out of other people's money to spend.
Right. And she was pretty much a big spender, and she raised taxes.
Yeah.
Her record is not very bright either, nor is St. Reagan's.
No statist is.
Nor is St. Reagan's, because one of the first things that St. Reagan did after taking office was to pressure his Republican Congress to reluctantly raise the debt ceiling so that by the time that St. Reagan left office, he had tripled, if not quadrupled, the debt.
Wow. In 8 years, he quadrupled the debt?
If not tripled, quadrupled. And, yes, and he also, taxes went up under Reagan, withholding taxes, Social Security taxes. Thanks to that son of a bitch Greenspan, who was on his 83 commission to study Social Security, and that's what he recommended. I believe higher retirement age, and more contributions to the Social Security system.
Now, you know, Social Security is great for people who want to volunteer for it. I would like to opt out of it. I don't want anything from it, and I don't want to contribute to it. How do I do that?
Well, even those who choose to be in it, they have to realize that they're Republicans and especially Democrats have raided the lockbox on Social Security. That's why there's little or nothing in there. It's based on unsound economics anyway, but they've made it worse by raiding it.
Yeah, it's full of IOUs is what it is.
All right, so that future generations are paying for people to retire now and they're getting much more out of it than they ever paid into it. As are those who are collecting unemployment, where they keep extending unemployment, which is sort of a mixed blessing because a lot of those people are out of work, not necessarily by their own fault because of what the Fed caused in this whole trade cycle. But I'm sure those people who are collecting unemployment are receiving much more than they ever paid into it. And, of course, Obama's buying a lot of votes with that.
Well, that's for sure. It's another type of welfare in the end. You know, it's a sad situation, you know, what the Fed has created and all this unemployment and all the government regulations and taxation. It destroys incentives for creating businesses and jobs. So they all go overseas, someplace where the business climate's more welcoming. But another point of the Social Security lockbox that, you know, has a bunch of IOUs, that's another way they're covering up the real deficits as compared to what's being reported in the mainstream media. According to John Williams, the brilliant economist of ShadowStats, he has a website, shadowstats.com, he said the deficit of last year of $1.3 billion, if you take away all of the Social Security, you know, balancing act going on.
$1.3 billion.
Saying,
excuse me, $1.3 billion. Aren't your numbers a little low?
$1.3 trillion.
Thank you.
Sorry, I mixed up the B and the T. I was pretending to be a ventriloquist there. Yeah. So $1.3 trillion, it was actually more on the order of $5.5 trillion. If you take away all of the accounting legerdemain that they use by taking Social Security and other kinds of, you know, benefits, packages, and rolling them into covering all those extra debts.
And then plus the stuff that I think Reagan or Bush used to call off budget.
Oh, yeah.
Billions off
also
budget.
Also in some circles,
you know,
known as black ops.
We can't do that as individuals.
That's for sure.
You know, it's
we're
just
in fact
awful
less
scheme.
And less these days.
Plus, these idiots are pushing for another war, and Obama is—he's just trying to slow the process down. He's not opposed to starting a new war; he just wants to give sanctions more time to work. Basically, as I understand it, that's been clarified that he is no friend of, you know, of peace per se. He might still attack. If he does, he'll probably wait till after the election.
Yeah, that's probably the whole idea, is to put it off so he can get reelected.
And maybe the Israelis will put it off for that purpose too, because I think that their American puppet, I don't think that they think that puppet's going to want a dog in this fight so soon.
That sounds about right to me.
But those idiot Republicans,
logical sense.
The idiot Republicans, Romney, Gingrich, Santorum, they're all pushing for a war. Of course, they won't go. None of them have served, but they'll, you know, they won't go.
Chickenhawks.
I think what's going to happen is, assuming if Romney gets the nomination, it may be a close election, but Obama's going to win. Only Ron Paul can beat Obama. I still say only Ron Paul can beat Obama.
I would agree with you on that.
You should.
I do.
Well, that's what I see happening with Romney. And they talk about Romney possibly offering or throwing a bone to, you know, Rand Paul.
As a VP?
Yeah. It would be interesting if he offered it to Ron Paul, because as Lou Rockwell has mentioned in the past, you know, before probably 1850 or so, the president and vice president were more like adversaries. They were from different parties quite often, and they, you know, sort of kept a lid on things.
That sounds like a good idea.
Tempered things, yeah, yeah. So that could be
a
good thing.
I like
Ron
good
Paul
luck in Congress.
Speak his mind. Assuming Ron Paul can still speak his mind and didn't become a neocon or go down that path, which scares me because of the manipulation that the CIA might do with mind control, drugs, who knows. That's the scary thing,
and
those bastards.
And overt threats as well.
Yes. Well, I'd still like to know where the CIA gets their marching orders from. Is it the Illuminati? Is it from the globalists? I don't think it's from the president, because that way he can stay out of it. He doesn't have to acknowledge anything.
I have the feeling they're their own kind of monster. You know, whoever they answer to, I think this thing is, it's morphed into something beyond what anybody ever expected it to be.
Well, it's not Leon Panetta. I wouldn't think. I wonder who they answer to. I wonder who gives them their marching orders. It doesn't come from Congress, does it? Some secret dude.
I think they're their own particular little mafia, or big mafia, I should say. They finance themselves through the drug trade and money laundering, which nobody else is allowed to do except them and the Fed. And I don't know. That's just my opinion. You know, I have no proof about it, but that's just the way it seems.
It would be funny to hear Obama's answer for who gives the CIA their marching orders. Just to hear his BS on it, you know, I would love to hear that answer. But I've wondered about this. Yeah. I've asked several guests in the past, and no one has a clear answer for it.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion that many of these, you know, the FBI, the CIA, even the military, I think all of these organizations within government, I think they're their own little entities, and they all kind of do what they want, and every once in a while somebody pulls the reins back on them, but in general they follow their own plans, and they have their own little clique that runs them. That's my belief about the whole thing.
And one hand doesn't know what the other hand's doing, so they all are stupid, plausible deniability.
Yeah, constantly. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how it works. Oh, we didn't know this. I told them not to do that, but it wasn't my fault. But, you know. And then somebody, every once in a while, they feed the dog a bone, you know, the American public. This was the bad guy. He's the one you should persecute. We're a really good organization, but he did bad things, and we didn't know about it.
Right. Well, now they're heavily infiltrated.
Kind of like in the financial district.
Now they're heavily infiltrated in Syria.
Oh, boy. I think they're heavily infiltrated in the whole Middle East.
They want to destroy another secular Muslim country, which is something they want anyway. They supposedly they don't want radical Islam, so they destroy the secular Muslim countries.
Oh, wow.
You know, Assad might not be a nice guy, but he's better than chaos and turmoil. And I believe that Mossad and CIA, but I repeat myself, are heavily involved.
I wouldn't doubt it.
And that is the next pin to fall before Iran.
Yeah, and Iran, which is such a threat to Israel.
Right, Israel with its 200 to 300 nukes.
And Iran, who has a 1980s, early 1980s air force and maybe a couple of missiles and 1,000 miles away from Israel. How can they be such a threat?
Well, they have if I was Iran, I've said this before, I would have the best SAM missiles I could get from China and Russia. I wouldn't waste my money on an air force. That's expensive to maintain. Missiles, they got missiles that'll take out ships, those surface cruising missiles. If the U.S. attacks Iran, they're going to lose some ships, I'm pretty damn sure, because their anti-missile missiles ain't going to get everything, and Iran has a lot of missiles.
Yeah, and we're going to be paying gas prices like they're paying in Europe right now.
Well, Iran, you know, also, like I like to say, has about 25,000 Persian Jews living there, and they're not threatened, nor are they trying to get the hell out of the country. I think there may even be one in their parliament.
Yeah, there are. I was just reading an article about that. They're saying there are like three in the parliament that were elected.
Yeah.
They follow their own religion. They're not harassed. They're not bothered. Nobody cares, you know, about how they live their life.
That's true.
Well, what's that all about?
Well, you don't hear the neocons talking about that. I mean, I'd throw that right in their face to Bill Kristol, that bastard, and the rest of this crowd. You know, nobody – I would love to confront them, but, you know, I heard that prick David Frum tonight. He's from American Enterprise Institute, I think. David Frum, who wrote the Axis of Evil crap, that speech. Jewish Canadian come lately to get American citizenship, another neocon. But I did hear George Galway lay into him pretty well on YouTube.
Well, that's good.
But, you know who Frum is?
You know, the name is familiar, but it's not striking a bell right now.
He's a real weasel.
Does he know who I am?
No. But Charles Krauthammer is another one.
Anyway.
That's a jerk. Him, Richard Pearl.
They're all neocons.
Paul Wolfowitz, Douglas Feith, Kagan, all these neocon bastards, you know. Now even supposedly Tony Blair has remorse about invading Iraq. You know, he's made millions off the that whole military-industrial thing, the British military thing. He's made millions of that. And so now these bastards, you know, they're kind of like, well, maybe we shouldn't have done it. We should have done it differently. You know, they cause all this death and destruction. They're wallowing in their millions afterwards.
Well, it's like asking for forgiveness after the crime. You know, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than to ask for permission. Everybody feels sorry afterwards.
Right, but their crimes are a major magnitude.
Oh, of course they are.
You know, this is not...
Hey, PK, just for your listeners out there, can you explain to us again what a neocon is, where they came from?
The neoconservatives...
A lot of people, when they say neocon, they think Republican right away.
Well, that's pretty close. There are in the Democratic Party too, but they historically they come from the left. They're Trotskyites, and their hero Leo Strauss was a German Jewish immigrant who taught, I think, at University of Chicago, and he advocated and condone lying and all this sort of stuff to get ahead to you know, politically and whatnot, and to further the aims of the state. The neoconservatives are very pro-Israel. They're many of them are Jewish, and they have their American Christian Zionist followers. Norman Podhoretz was one of the leading ones, and so was Irving Kristol, the late Irving Kristol. I wish his son would soon join him, but he was one of the architects of neoconservatism. They believe in this so-called American greatness, American empire, expanding more wars, and unquestionable support to Israel. And they are not opposed to the welfare state as long as they're running it. They are, you could call them, conservative welfare statists.
Yeah, well, in another sense, you know, historically they sound like, you know, apparatchik communists. You know, they love communism as long as they're at the top, and everybody else is equal at the bottom.
Yes, they also started their movement in the mid to late 60s when they saw that the left, I guess, was too soft on communism and becoming more critical of Israel. So now, you know, and there you could say that Hillary is a neocon. They're in the Democratic Party, too. I mean, Hillary's quite the hawk. Look what she's advocating. And, of course, you know, the whole Democratic leadership voted for the war.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So they
claim that the Republicans are the war party, but the Democrats have been historically in the last 100 years the biggest war party. They started all the major wars, got us involved in the biggest major wars.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's that all about? Republicans just trying to keep up or something?
Yeah. And the way I see it is about this war stuff. They're basically agree on everything, both parties. That's why they're willing to keep Obama, because he's pro-war. So the neocons don't mind having him around. Kristol doesn't mind having him around. You know, so I think this year you're going to see fewer – you won't see many Obama bumper stickers and signs. You won't see all this hope and change crap. But his followers are many, and they're still going to vote for him. That's what I see. I see a lot of support for him. When I look on YouTube and whatnot, I still see people want to support him because, you know, they're really turned off by the Republicans and the idiots. They keep talking about Obama, who is horrible. But you don't see – Ron Paul doesn't speak about Obama too much. You know, a few statements here or there, but the Republicans dwell on it, and that turns a lot of people off.
Yeah.
A lot of would be, you know, maybe opponents to Obama, but – they can't stomach voting for a Republican. So, you know, they're just going to make more of a mess of it. They're probably studying the criticisms they have of each other. So whoever the front runner is, they can Obama could say, well, I agree with Gingrich, what he said about you, or I agree with Santorum. You know, so I think Obama is going to sneak by and continue to worsen the economy.
Of course. In fact, at this point, I don't think it would matter if a Santorum, if a Gingrich, if what's the other guy, or Obama got elected. It's just going to continue the same way, because
pretty
the vested interests are so dug in. Nothing's going to change until it crumbles,
or until their next crisis happens. Republicans will say, "Well, we had to spend this. We had to do this because it's a crisis."
Of course,
that's their mentality. That's what they do. You know, none
necessity
of them ever kept
is the cry
promise.
Of the tyrant.
Say what?
Necessity is the cry of the tyrant.
Oh, right, right. So
always.
Until there's another crisis, that's what's going to happen. They'll supposedly go around their path of smaller spending. It's laughable when you hear these Republicans talking about, we'd still like to have somebody else in the race, someone who's a true conservative. Well, Ron Paul's got the most conservative voting record of any of them.
Yeah, but he's not a serious candidate, you know.
Yeah, he's not really conservative.
I'm still not sure what that means.
I wish he was more combative, and I wish he would have said that, you know, I represent the Jeffersonian constitutional wing of the Republican Party, which is where the Republican Party should be. That's the reasoning he should use. He should have been more combative, you know. He's too nice.
Yeah, well.
He didn't have to get too personal, but he could sure, you know, talk more about his record and – not boast, but talk about how accurate he's been about, you know, the wars, the economy, the spending, the deficits, the drug war. He's been right about everything.
Yeah, I agree.
People aren't used to hearing that. One person's right about everything, you know.
Yeah, are you ever amazed? I mean, do you ever get, like, even today, if I ever tell anybody, you know, Democrats, Republicans, how do you tell them apart? They're both the same. They look at me like I'm crazy. And they think, what? You're kidding. The Democrats are this and this and this. I said, no. They all do the same thing. How do you tell them apart?
They're basically the same.
What do you say to people?
They basically agree on everything except how much to spend.
Oh, yeah.
That's the difference. They basically agree on everything about except how much to spend. And
what to spend it on.
It used to be the Democrats were the big spenders, but they've been outdone.
Yeah, I think so.
I certainly agree. So that's what they – and that Carol Quigley, who wrote Tragedy and Hope, that bastard who in the 60s, who was a supporter of the globalists – and that whole CFR Rockefeller thing, he just wished that they were more open about it. But they let him examine a lot of their works, and that's where he came out with that book, Tragedy and Hope, in which he said that, you know, the powers that be, they want people to think that the masses, they want the masses to think that there's a difference between the parties when essentially there really isn't.
Yeah.
You know, there really isn't. Except, again, how much they want to spend, because they both bring us to war. They both support the drug wars. They support the foreign interventions. I mean, look what Obama did to Libya. Now they're doing to Syria.
Right.
That idiot John McCain thinks we should start bombing Syria.
Wow.
A country that's never threatened the U.S.
First.
He wants to bomb them. I say we send that son of a bitch John McCain back to Vietnam to finish his sentence.
That would be good. Or why don't we send him in with a, you know, he can be all wrapped up with explosives and he can blow himself up just to show how it's done.
That's right. Like Sam, what's his name? Slim Pickens going down that rocket.
Yeah, and Dr. Strangelove?
Dr. Strangelove.
Yeehaw!
That's right. Send old John McCain, McCain. You know, here's another bastard.
That's how he should go.
You know, his wife's a multimillionaire, heir to that family fortune. So he's set up. We'll just send other youngins to die.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, it's those rich people that are the problem.
Well, not in the sense that, I think Occupy Wall Street thinks. I'm not down on wealth, per se. I'm just down on these...
No, me neither.
This crowd that's tied into the government trough. They get their money from the government trough.
Those are the true rich people. Yeah, yeah. The ones who live off of graft.
Not the Henry Fords and the Bill Gates and the Steve Jobs, although Bill Gates is sort of a globalist.
No, not the producers who produce things that people want to buy. Not at all. No.
Although Bill Gates is pretty much, he's kind of a globalist, and he's pushing his eugenics agenda and this and that philanthropy. Yeah, yeah. So, but, I mean, the Henry Fords, the Harvey Firestones, the... Alexander Graham Bells, the Thomas Edisons, that's the crowd I respect who earned their money and they weren't standing in line for a government contract or government handout.
Hey, what about Warren Buffett these days?
Well, he's sort of, he's the worst example of that, isn't he?
Yeah, he sure is.
What is he, a super rich Democrat? I mean, who knows? Actually, who cares?
Oh, who knows? All I know is he makes most of his money off of government contracts now.
Well, yeah, and that his failed windmills, I think, in Texas were sitting on top of a lot of water or something, so now he's trying to tie into that. You know, they're all
– sure.
That whole crowd is the – they're the corporate socialists, state capitalists. They get their money through the state, and then they, you know, then they praise the state, and they say they're for smaller government. They're a bunch of hypocrites.
Yeah, of course.
And they continue to get away with it.
I always figure whatever they're saying, just believe the opposite.
Right.
Whatever they say, it's the opposite. Yeah.
Or like that great old British saying, never believe anything until it's officially denied.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think that's a good one. So do you think there's going to be a, if not this year, or maybe after the election or early next year, do you think they're going to hit Iran?
Well, it's beginning to seem like it's baked in the cake. Somewhere or another, something's going to be started because they got to cover up something else. You know, they need a distraction right now because the financial situation is abysmal. It's much worse than anything you're going to hear on the news. It's much worse than anything you're hearing about Europe. I mean, I was just talking to my father-in-law, and I remember the price of gas in Italy and in France, I don't know, a year ago, a year and a half ago? No, not even a year ago, last summer. It was around, I don't know, $6.50 a gallon, which was about, I think it came out to about €1.27 a liter. And right now, it's €1.99 per liter, comes out to $10.35 a gallon.
But doesn't some of that stem from the fact that just like the dollar, the euro's in the toilet, and the oil-producing countries know that those currencies aren't worth much, so they're charging more? Isn't that inflation that Ron Paul talks about? Because isn't oil still about the same price in terms of gold or silver?
Yeah. Actually, oil's going down in the price of gold. Gold has actually gone up. It's keeping pace with it. Yeah, okay, yeah. It's basically, it'll cover your ass if you're worried about the inflation going on in the price of oil and everything. But what's more important is that it's the war drums that are being beaten right now. It's that Italy, it's that France, it's that, you name a country, Greece, that they're, you know, trillions of dollars in debt and all of their bonds are starting to fail and they're having to offer more and more interest to get people to buy their bonds. Their socialist systems are failing. And they're having to wail on the gas price with more taxes to try to collect more to keep their coffers full or to cover all their promises to pay. That's what's really happening.
Well, Ron Paul wouldn't buy any government bonds. I've always thought I'd never buy any government bonds. What are they going to do, pay them off through more taxes and printing more money in the future?
Yeah, really. Here's something interesting that just came out from a group called Ag Capita. It's a financial company. They're talking about, kind of wishful thinking. It says by the year 2040, the only investment grade bonds left in the world will be in Canada. Australia, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, South Korea, Spain, Sweden, the United Kingdom, USA will be non-investment grade by 2040. In fact, Japan will be non-investment grade by 2020. USA will be BBB rated by 2020, but I think still it's way overrated, our bonds. And by 2030, the USA will be non-investment grade, which means junk bonds, which means the dollar is toast.
Why would anybody buy bonds?
I don't know.
I mean, government bonds, don't they just pay them through taxes and inflation?
Exactly, yes. And they're paying, like 0.25% right now?
What, because they're tax-free or something? Is that why people buy them?
I don't think they are. Municipal bonds are tax-free. Those are the ones on cities.
Uh-huh.
And those are failing left and right. Was it Harrisburg, Pennsylvania? They're going to miss the next two bond payments, and this is not even a big city. There's something like, I don't know, $30 billion in debt. I may be overstating that, but they can't pay
Harrisburg,
it. There's
the
no
capital?
Way they can pay it. Yes, Harrisburg is the capital of Pennsylvania.
I mean, I've been there. They're that much in debt? You mean they are or the state is?
No, just the city. Here, hold on. Pennsylvania's capital of 50,000 people is mired in $326 million of debt due to the expense of retrofits and repairs of its troubled trash incinerator. It's going to miss, $326 million. It's 50,000 people. Like 3 or 4 years ago, they had a huge handout. You know, they were going around like weatherproofing people's homes, and they had, putting people to work under Obama.
Uh-huh.
Harrisburg was a major spot for that.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. And they're going to miss their $5.3 million of debt payments. And according to one financial analyst, he said, this is just a trickle that's soon to be turned into a torrent of cities not being able to pay their debts. Because they can't invest their money supply. They have to borrow from the federal government or the state government, and they don't have money. None of the states have money.
There was not only a lot of waste, obviously, in the stimulus package, but it's just to maintain current consumption. There's no long-term investment. It's not, they're just throwing money at a problem.
Yeah, throwing money down a rat hole.
And this stuff hasn't really come back to haunt Obama yet in a big way where it should.
It should. We got a $16 trillion public debt. I mean, don't people, I mean, the numbers are so enormous that they're just beyond comprehension now. Just trying to figure out what $1 trillion is. That's an enormous number.
So is a billion. But as I understand it, for example, as far as the left, they're not very concerned about debt. That's not something that they're too concerned about.
Yeah, because in the end, somebody will default. There's going to be a default, or they're going to inflate it away. It's easier just to inflate it away, though.
Well, I don't understand why. Well, I guess I do, but you know, I think there should be massive tax increases in America, in the sense that federal taxes, in the sense that if these people want their stupid wars and they want all this stuff, like Mises said, all this spending should only come from taxes. No inflation, no deficits, no borrowing. You know, it should only come from taxes. And then when the masses see how much it's costing them, I think they would revolt. I think there would be a revolt.
Oh, yeah.
But now it's disguised.
Yeah, completely. They don't see it because it's all deficit spending. It's all borrowed money and printed money that's being spent. And so far, most of it's moving overseas. It hasn't all come rolling home yet.
Wow.
And that's the day we'll see the hyperinflation kick in.
Well, isn't it also because that's true, but isn't it also because the banks aren't lending and they just have a lot in their coffers?
They got a lot sitting on there because the Fed is paying them like 2.5% just to hold the money on their accounts. So they don't have to lend it.
So how do they pay them that? I mean, they're paying them 2.5%. Is that just money they print? I mean, where does the money come from that they pay them?
It's like a confidence game. What's that?
So that's where the money comes that they pay them. They create the money to pay the interest?
Yeah. That's what it seems like. I don't know all the mechanics of it, but it's not coming from anywhere. It's like the game, you know, how does the thing work with the Fed? The Treasury says we're going to issue so many bonds or the Fed's going to issue them, we're going to buy them. Buy them with what, though? It's all more promissory. It's just pieces of paper going back and forth. There's nothing behind it except another promise to pay or another promise to raise taxes or, you know, borrow more money to pay that debt. It's like what they're saying, you know, I don't know if you've heard this or read in the news. You don't hear it in the mainstream. It's kind of buried on, you know, page 37 of the financial thing in a very small blip where the car company is saying, oh, yeah, we've made all the money. We paid all of our TARP funds back. Well, they haven't really paid them back. They borrowed more money to be able to pay back the debt so they could say they paid them back.
Right, right.
So, you know, to say they're successful and everything's turning around, again, you know, it's smoke and mirrors. It's a confidence game. If we can just keep the American public confident for long enough, maybe we'll get out of this. You know, it's all wishful thinking in the end. It's like, if I just wait long enough, maybe I won't have to pay off my house. If I just wait long enough, maybe I'll be able to keep my car without paying for it. If I just wait long enough, maybe my negative bank balance will turn positive some magical way, you know.
Well, they were saying, I thought last year that, you know, GM had paid back its loans, but I thought, or most of them. Yeah, well, they just used stimulus money to pay them back, right?
Yeah, they used borrowed money to pay back the loans. And then they put out this car called the Volt, which is, you know, say it costs $40,000, but of course you get an $8,500 tax credit to go towards buying it. Of course, they took $3.5 billion in money from the government to be able to produce the thing. So actually the cost of the car is about $300,000 a piece and they don't work. Yeah. It's more expensive doing one of those things than just to buy a $16,000 four-cylinder engine car, which, you know, over 10 years, you're going to spend less on gas than you would just buying the Volt, putting electricity into it and gas, you know? I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, but at least you're leaving a smaller carbon footprint.
Nonsense. What does it take to make one of those things? Jesus. What about all the mining and all the special metals and all the toxic chemicals it takes to produce one?
I love it when the left criticizes, I think even Romney, about how, you know, he denies man-made global warming. You know, I think if there is some, it's man might have a little bit to do with it, but it's also cyclical and You know, there was global warming before industrialization. So
yeah, there was. That's normal for the Earth to heat and cool over time. Yeah,
I'm a.
I think sunspots have more to do with it.
I'm a climate change skeptic and proud of it.
Me too.
You know, climate again, change. I like to say, you know, what is? How do they explain global or climate change before industrialization? So that's their new religion. That's the left's new religion. You have two sides of the same coin.
It sure is.
You have the left saying, oh, the end is near because the sky is falling. And on the other side, the end is near because God is coming.
That's
so,
right.
Again, they're both part of the same coin. They're both two sides of the same coin, basically, the way I see it.
Yeah.
You know,
it's all political posturing.
I was debating this liberal 2 years ago. He says he was a Ron Paul supporter, but I said, he said he was an atheist. I said, well, I am too. But I said, you claim to be an atheist, but you're a devout member of the Church of Climate Change.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just another drug, a drug by any other name.
Well, right. You know, so I enjoyed ripping him on that, but, I forgot to put out there if anybody wanted to happen to call in here today to confront the great Andy about climate change or gold or anything, you can call in at 888-429-5471 here at Third Stream View, where we're not afraid to talk about the issues.
That's for sure. Fine.
Have you seen the blatant Israeli power over the U.S. in the last week or two with the AIPAC meetings and all this?
Oh, my. Who's in charge there?
There have been American Jews shouting them down or protesting against them. You hardly see much of it, but they are shouted down by other Jews. They're called Jews calling Jews Nazis and
wow,
and this and that. And it goes on in Israel,
that's
too.
That's not too far from the truth in historical retrospect, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it goes down in Israel, too. There's more debate about this stuff in Israel than there is here. And, which is good to know, probably the majority of Israelis do not want war with Iran. Netanyahu and that crowd, they're a bunch of idiots. And they want to push more war and get more people killed. And here's these Zionist atheists talking about, you know, I laugh at they're quoting the Bible or the history of the Jews and this and that. Yet they're atheists. So...
yeah,
you know, it's the hypocrisy of it all. I mean, I'm a non-militant atheist, but they're descendants of the crowd. Actually, it was the atheist Zionist Jews in Russia who were the architects and the commissars who murdered all those people. Stalin's willing executioners.
Yeah. And PK, what's your take on what's happening in Israel with them? Kind of, putting up a. How do you explain it? They're attacking the Orthodox Jews who want to live in Israel, who've probably been there the longest, and want to just study their religion and not be bothered and live their own lives.
Who is the Israeli government?
Like they're kind of upping the attacks on them to stop their traditional ways of living, and then you can't do this and you can't do that. You got to start fitting in with society. You got to join the military. You got
the Israeli government
taxes.
Is?
Yeah.
I know that there's a sect of Jews over there who don't work, who don't want to work, and their whole thing is just to study their religion and, you know, promote all that stuff. There have been Occupy movements in, similar to Occupy Wall Street movements in Israel. There's unemployment, inflation over there, high prices, so there a lot of those folks are pissed off, too. A lot of them are pissed off, too. You just don't see much about it or hear much about it, but there is a lot of displeasure in Israel against its own government and what's going on. So I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah.
But you don't hear that
No.
You don't
much.
Hear about that over here. There's more probably debate about the American special, I hate that term, the special relationship with Israel. There's probably more of that talk there than there is here.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. I mean, the Israelis I know who live here. They leave there because it's too expensive to live there. They just can't stand paying, you know, 300% import taxes on cars and the outrageous cost of living. It's run them out of the country. they leave because it's just too expensive, and because of, you know, the constant, you know, drums of war going constantly, you know, and shooting at each other and the bombs going off.
Well, yeah, Israel's the most dangerous place in the world for Jews to live.
Yeah. Why would anybody want to move there?
Move into the desert, because the Rothschild Zionists set that up, and after World War II, they coerced and pressured other Jews to move there and, you know, be part of their Jewish state, which is just a big phony mess. And it's the most dangerous, again, it's the most dangerous place in the world for Jews to live. So what a failure that is. And then we're supposed to, you know, fund it, give them free weapons, you know. Netanyahu says we can defend ourselves, fight their own battles. Yeah, I'd like to see you do it without American foreign aid and a free supply of endless supply of American made murder weapons. I'd like to see you do it that way, Israel. Do it on your own. Do it without any American tax dollars.
Yeah, isn't that what Ron Paul said? He said, let's cut these guys. I mean, they want to go on their own. Leave them alone. They're their own country. They have the right of self-determination. He said, let's stop giving them aid. Let them take care of themselves. And, of course, then he's called anti-Semite.
Well, I still prefer an arms embargo against Israel also. But I go further than Ron Paul. Yeah, they can let them defend themselves. Let them do their own thing. But, you know, then they'll have to face the consequences. But the scary thing with those Israeli bastards is their Samson option, which is if they find themselves going down, they got missiles pointed at Spain, at Britain, at Germany, at France, you know, Russia.
That's creepy.
They will take a lot of countries with them. So, and they've got their nuclear subs. I mean, it's very dangerous, the power they have and all their nukes. You know,
that sounds very Stalin-esque. That sounds like something Stalin would have done.
That is the problem. You know, they are the problem. You know, and the demonization of Islam, because you didn't have this demonization of Islam prior to 1948, when Israel was finally imposed upon Palestine by the Rothschild-backed Zionists. So that's where this comes from. They want to set up their own state, which they wanted to do prior to World War I, during and after, and that's how they got it set up. So that's the history of what went on. It was set up by atheist Jews. And that photo of Theodor Herzl, who was their Hungarian atheist Jew, who set this up when they had that meeting in Switzerland in 1897, where they wanted to, you know, have their own Zionist state. And that was before there was no major persecution of Jews in Europe that I know of at that time. There was in Russia, they had pogroms, but, you know, that's a different case. But even then, there's reasons why this happened. It's not just hate, because every country has well-to-do people, but they weren't necessarily, you know, attacked and, oppressed. So
sure,
this whole mess. But you got international Zionism, and, you know, that's how I see the power structure in league with the Rockefeller, you know, the Rothschild, Rockefeller, Bush wing, that power structure. And that's what's going down. So they want to destroy Syria, one of the few last secular Muslim countries. You know, they've destroyed Libya. Iran is the next. What's after that, you know? So I just wish that they would stop all their fear-mongering and their more war-mongering, because that's what they're trying to do. And the more the U.S. really started helping Israel in 67, that's when it really got bad, their stupid war, that as I understand it, they preempted that war against Egypt and whatnot. So this is the legacy of all that. And the more the U.S. has been involved, the worse it's got. And I say to people, you know, America had no enemies in the Middle East prior to 1948, when Israel was violently imposed upon Palestine. Where was all this demonization of Islam prior to 1948? They still had the Quran and all this stuff. Women were dressing as they dressed. But there was not this demonization of Islam like there is now. And Israel pulled this off. It worked like a charm, because Americans are fearful, jittery people anyway. So you know, there's this Islamophobia going on here, and it, they've got some in Europe and elsewhere. And it who does it suit? It really supports Israel and the military-industrial congressional complex. If you look who's benefited from it, the war machine and Israel. They want a greater Israel. They want, you know, from what, the Euphrates to the Mediterranean Sea. That's how I see it.
Sounds about right.
But they've got all those nukes. That's the problem. They got 200 to 300 nukes. They need to be totally defanged. It's just, what will they do to those nukes? The Samson option, that is a scary thing. Well, hey, we're going to go down.
Scary.
Let's kill the English. Let's kill the French. Let's send the, damn it. Let's send the nukes everywhere. We can hit Russia, China, India. We can hit everyone.
It's creepy, huh?
Very creepy. You know, Iran's not going to hit Europe. That's BS, a missile shield to defend from Iran. Iran's not interested in hitting Europe. The Zionist propaganda is unbelievable.
From what I understand, Iran has never started a war with anyone.
Well,
am I right?
You know, back in their days, 300 Spartans, you know, they did have some imperial stuff going on. But
no, I'm talking about in the modern era, in the 20th century.
In fact,
not
they
even
were
in the
occupied,
19th century.
In 1941, Iran was occupied by Britain and Russia because they didn't want Germany to, you know, they didn't want their oil to fall into German hands.
Yeah, Germany. Oh, boy, that's another story. Impossible.
Well,
if Germany had gotten a load of their oil, how could they have gotten that? They didn't even have the economics to move the stuff.
To move what?
I'm just thinking of Germany during World War II. Their economic situation was in such a way that they could have never extracted the oil from Iran. They could have never moved it. They had to rely upon imports.
Well, because the Allies would have bombed it. But
yeah, that too, yeah.
Turkey was, I think,
anyway,
rather neutral in World War II. And Turkey was allied with Germany in World War I. In fact, Germany built a railroad.
Ottoman Empire.
And I think the railroad went all the way to Baghdad. So, you know,
wow.
You have to know the history. But why are we talking about history? We're Americans. Why are we supposed to know anything about history?
I don't know. They just had NASCAR over in Las Vegas this week, and I heard a guy. You know, it must have been kind of strange. I couldn't have been a NASCAR fan because he said he didn't like country music or drinking beer.
They had NASCAR out in Vegas.
Yeah, it's the big weekend.
You mean like a rally, but not a race? Was there a race?
No, NASCAR race at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway.
Really?
Yeah, they got a big track here.
Do they have a big turnout?
About 250,000.
Wow.
Yeah,
so
it's been
popular
going on
out there, huh?
19... What's that?
It's popular out in Las Vegas?
Oh, yeah. It's racing is popular out here. I mean, you know, it's the West Coast, car culture and all. It's, it's been going on since 1997, NASCAR in Vegas. They built the track out there in 96, I think. And it opened up for the first race. Maybe it was 98 the first race opened up.
Wow.
Yeah. Big thing, you know. They need oil. Need lots of gas.
There's a lot of money in that NASCAR racing of the people who support it. I mean, I'm not a fan, but I don't put those folks down. I mean, those NASCAR people, they make good soldiers.
Yeah, they sure do.
I like that sergeant that went and shot up all those people and burnt the bodies.
Wow, what's that all about? How did that happen?
About that last week in Afghanistan.
See, he's another guy. He's an outsider now. He was like a kooky guy. No, he wasn't one of us. Yeah, he was here, but now we're going to find something about him that's not right.
This idiot Marine sergeant goes out 3 a.m. He goes from house to house. He kills, murders like 16 people. Then he burns the bodies.
Wow.
Of course, they're all apologizing.
Have they given an explanation yet?
But that's the crap that war starts 10 years in Afghanistan. It's ridiculous. He says he's gonna draw the troops down later this year, but there'll still be thousands there, I'm sure.
Of course. And they'll just be moved someplace else.
Well, they'll probably stay there as an occupation or a peacekeeping force. They'll change the terminology, but, I mean, there's still going to be thousands in Iraq with their stupid billion-dollar – embassy that's bigger than the Vatican in Iraq.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you got to realize a lot of those military will be rolled out, you know, as discharges and gone into private contractors who will then provide military services.
I know somebody's doing that now. Yeah, and they're paying those bastards like $2,000 to $3,000 a week.
Yeah.
Why not? It's not their money.
More than they made in the military.
They're all gouging at the tax trough. I don't see how they can keep it going. I don't see how they can keep it going when the country's broke and it's trillions of dollars in debt, and they can continue to keep these wars going and pay these guys this kind of money.
Well, I think you're going to find, and according to a lot of commentators, a lot of people in the know in the financial world, not the ones you're going to hear on mainstream media, but the ones who, you know, work in the gold world and the private financial advisors, they're talking about the dollar. 2012 is the year you're going to see it starting to crater. So a lot of that money going out is going to have to be increased, and then the inflation is going to really kick in.
What are your you're going to
find all
your
these years of profligate spending are coming home to roost.
You talk to your in-laws much about this? Wasn't your father-in-law a banker?
Yeah. He handled some accounts. He wasn't like, you know, a bank owner or anything like that.
Do you ever talk politics with him?
A little bit, but he gets all wound up.
And what do they think about him, what's happening? Do they see what's happening? What do they think?
Well, all they say is Europe is getting more and more and more expensive. The cost of everything is going through the roof. You know, my mother-in-law said that Europe is going down. It's like, oh, okay. And then they told me the price of gas right now. I was like, oh, my gosh. And it would kill us. Imagine Americans paying $10 a gallon for gas.
Well, a lot
I think all that stuff in the Middle East is about trying to keep the price of fuel low in the United States. The more I look at it, the more this is all about the oil. And yet they'll never say it's about the oil.
But how is it keeping the cost low when the military budget is so massive? It seems like it's, you know, six to one, half a dozen the other. But a lot of the really expensive European petrol, though, is taxes, isn't it?
A lot of it, yeah. A lot of it's import taxes, it's delivery taxes, it's the tax to drive your car on the road, it's you name it. They have a tax for everything. In France, they just raised the VAT tax from 18% to 21%.
Oh, boy.
Imagine that. Imagine if your sales tax when you walk into the store was 21% on everything you bought.
Plus they pay income tax.
Plus massive income tax. Plus it's impossible to start a business. It takes at least 2 years to get anything okayed over there. You know, and you know, the whole country's communist.
Well, the thing is, you mean socialist. I was just there again. I was there in September, and I love France. I don't like the unions. I don't like the taxes. I don't like the socialism. But I love the country.
No, me too. I like the food. I like traveling around. I like the countryside.
I love the architecture. The countryside is fantastic. It's just a shame that it's been run into the ground with more taxes and more socialism. And it's not real business friendly. It is not easy to start a business there. So,
yet it's years ahead of Italy.
It's more efficient. At the end of the day, I see how France works. I don't see how Italy works.
No, Italy works on the black market. That's why all these new they're bringing in a bunch of new laws in Italy. They have now any transaction over $1,000 has to be done on a credit card or through some kind of a financial services. You can't use more than $1,000 in cash for any transaction because they're trying to collect more taxes.
Really?
Which means more and more people work in the black market.
Well, yeah. And again, as I like to say, the black market is the free market driven underground by government regulation.
Exactly.
But the black market's what kept Russia going all those years.
Yeah, it's the thing that keeps Italy going all these years. They must have 50% of their 50% of their economy is the black market.
And so they're trying to thwart it with these credit card rules and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, hopefully they'll get around that somehow.
Well, what's happening is a lot of the businessmen there, it's destroying them. They can't do anything. It's freezing things up is what's happening, and there's becoming shortages of everything. So, the $1,000 is like, what? I just won't buy anything. Oh, I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm not going to start any new businesses. I'm not going to hire anybody. That's it. And that's what happens.
shortages in Italy.
Yeah.
In terms of what?
You won't hear about it in the news. Oh, in terms of employment, in terms of any kind of business transactions. You know, the usual stuff is still going on. You can still buy gas. You can still find food. Because, you know, there's the agricultural thing. It's everywhere. People sell stuff there, you know, farmers markets wherever you go. There are farmers all over the place, or as they like to say, peasant farmers who provide the best food. But, most of the business is just either going into the black market or going outside the country.
Wow. Yeah.
I don't see how they survive.
And you know, where are those people going to get their jobs? How long is this going to last? I mean, how does this, you know, it just seems like there's a pending collapse that we don't know when it's going to happen. But, man, it sure seems like it's just around the corner.
It is. That's, again, nobody ever knows exactly when it happens. These things usually happen where, you know, Friday everything's wonderful, then the weekend, and then over the weekend they make huge announcements, and Monday morning all the banks are closed. You know, that's how the Depression went. That's how Roosevelt closed all the banks and, you know, called a banking holiday and confiscated all the country's gold.
It's like Obama signing
every country.
It's like Obama signing that military detention thing, I think, on New Year's or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, while everybody was at recess.
It's really awful. Just totally awful what's going on. So, Andy, I appreciate you calling in so we could talk about the world's problems and have a laugh and just wonder why these stupid bureaucrats and politicians, they don't learn and they just keep doing the same stuff. Perhaps it's because they're on the government payroll and they have nice, fat, healthy pensions for the rest of their lives.
That's probably it. This is worse than anything that the American Revolution was fought over.
Jefferson, of course.
Washington, they all roll over in their grave today. Because now we're right back to having a supreme ruler. We have lords and ladies, dukes and duchesses. We have, you know, the landed elite. Except they're called something different. They're called politicians.
No, they're called Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
You know, so it's just more of the same crap. I don't see it getting any better. I hope that Ron Paul continues to slug it out, because when the convention comes, I hope it's a brokered convention. I hope the shit hits the fan. I hope there's something that goes down, because we Ron Paul Republicans are here to stay. We're not going away. And it's funny that these other bastards try to, you know, think that we're evil or bad, other Republicans. In fact, supposedly Ron Paul won in the Virgin Islands.
Wow.
He won the caucuses down there. And that's interesting.
I didn't even know they had him there.
I didn't either. And it's mostly black, you know, so unless there's the few whites that live down there. But, you know, it's mostly black, so it sort of backs up. If blacks down there did support him or vote for him in the primary, it does back up what I've read that said that Ron Paul is the number one Republican choice amongst minorities or non-white voters.
Wow. That's nice to hear.
And rightly so. Yes, yes. So anyway.
Get the rest of them to come over.
Yeah. Anyway, Andy, thanks again for joining us here at Third Stream View, spreading gloom and doom with the rest of us. And let's see what happens. Hope this war shit doesn't happen. I don't see the employment situation getting better. I think it's just BS.
No.
You know, companies are starting to hire. Yeah, what, here and there. It's, you know, there's millions still out of work, millions still getting unemployment. So, you know, I'm very pessimistic about the future. And I continue to support Ron Paul. Everything he said has come true. At least we know, since we know Austrian economics, we know what causes these problems. We can't tell you exactly when it's going to happen, but we know how and why. So there you have it. And with that, thanks again, Andy. This is your humble host, PK, signing off and saying that I am here every Monday evening, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern, right here at bbsradio.com, station 2. Thanks for listening in. Good night, everyone.